Today's show brought to you by the great people at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere, wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. Pickle bar led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none, my two favorites. Brewers Outlet gift cards for the holidays. Stock up right now for the game tonight as the Nittany Lions take on Michigan State as they play at Ford Field in Detroit. So stock up now, kick your feet up, and watch the game tonight. In fact, it's kind of refreshing to go to Michigan and do a football game and wear a golf shirt because we're indoors tonight. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online at sunburymotors.com. I think he might be wearing a golf shirt tonight, too. That's Donnie Collins, Scranton Times Tribune. Donnie, welcome back.
Anytime for you, Steve.
Appreciate it very much, Donnie. Okay. So the primary topic of the press conference, for obvious reasons, is what happened with Mike Yurcich. In the end, were you surprised by the move? Or is it more the timing of the move?
Yeah, I don't know if I was surprised by the move. I wouldn't have bet that it would happen during the season just because James has never made that kind of a move during the season. But I think there were some clear signs the last couple of weeks that this was not going to work out with Yurcich over the long term. And James, after the game on Saturday, when a head coach says, you know, we have to create some easy throws that every team does, that's not a good sign for the offensive coordinator, because it's obvious that that's really what this offense is missing. Some of those bread and butter plays in the passing game where you're going to get 5-6 yards and get yourself on schedule, get all those things that you want as an offense, get yourself moving, get your quarterback in the rhythm and all that. But yeah, and I agreed with James on that, but I didn't wake up Sunday thinking they were going to let go of Yurcich because that hadn't happened before. But, you know, to a degree, it's a bold move in the sense that, if you know you got to make it, you make it now and you get yourself in the market. But you also put yourself in the crosshairs for a couple of weeks here because, look, you have now, let go of three offensive coordinators in your tenure. And the next hire probably is going to be somebody that everybody's got to be really happy with, and it's got to be a home run hire. So I think a lot of pressure put on James, but I also, in that regard, don't believe James looks at it, or I don't think he shies away from the pressure of making a big hire. I mean, Manny Diaz was one, Yurcich was one. So I think he's got the courage of his convictions, but moving forward, I think this next one's got to be a good one for him.
Right. I know. I felt Penn State actually ran the ball well on Saturday against Michigan. Yet when you look at the first down mix, and the first down mix was fine in terms of the number of yards they gained, but it is unusual when you have 22 first down plays in a game you didn't win, and 19 of the 22 are runs. Do you think that factors into the you have to have some easier throws in there for your quarterback, especially early?
Yeah, I totally think that. At one point during the game, it's funny you mentioned it, because I forgot I did this and all the excitement, but at one point in the game, I turned to Frank Bodani, who was next to me. I know you've had him on the show a lot. But I said to Frank, how often have they thrown on first down? And at that point in the game, it was two. And I think the third one came pretty late, and it might have been the last drive where they had some desperation to them. But they were really, and again, you can't argue it because they were running it well enough.
Yes.
I mean, they were doing their job in that fast of the game. So if it's not broke, why change it? And they were, I don't think they were necessarily off schedule as they were in other, definitely in the Ohio State game, they were third and long all the time. But they were running the ball well enough. So I didn't think it was that big a deal. But I did before the game say, hey, look, first play here, run your safest pass play. Get yourself 5-6 yards, get going. And they ran it. And you didn't see that safe pass play. So I think you're right. I think when you look at the mix, when it's 19-3, that's no faith in the pass game. And I don't know if this is the offensive coordinator, you can have no faith in the pass game. You have to have those couple of plays that are going to work and move yourself down the field. Or at least you know, the whole rhythm thing with Drew, it's a big thing. You know, when he gets out of rhythm, he's not the same player. But when he's in rhythm, he's terrific. So you got to get him going. And I don't think in either of the two losses Penn State did. And the obvious response to that is, well, they lost to two of the best three or four teams in the country and two of the three or four best defenses in the country. And I get that. But you still have to figure out a way. There's got to be somewhere where you can compete in that area and make sure your offense is giving itself a chance. And I'm not sure running it 19 times, even running it well, is the way to go there against a good team.
To me, the key sequence in the game, and you may disagree with this, and I know they ran it 32 straight times. And with that quarterback, you're always worried he's going to play action. You can't just put 11 guys in the box. Because this guy's going to can play action, and he's really good at it at 84%. But to me, the key sequence was you score at the end of the first half, and we could debate the extra point thing, but you know, it's fine. But you score at the end of the half, you have some momentum, and you're going to get the ball to start the second half. And you're 6 of 9 on the season entering the game, scoring on your first drive of the second half with 5 touchdowns and a field goal. And you get a first down. And then you get another first down, but that's when Drew fumbles the ball in getting that first down. They recovered. Now, I know it turns out to be 3, but they took forever to get down the field to do it. And they ate the clock and got 3 points. To me, that was the sequence between the two.
Yeah, I thought there was 2 sequences in the game, and that was certainly one of them. And I don't know about you. I had a feeling they were going to score. I thought they figured something out. They came out pretty aggressive there, and I thought at that point, yeah, they're looking pretty good here. It was 14-9 at that point. Even if they get 3,
right.
You're feeling pretty good about it if you're Penn State. So I thought that was a huge play. But James is right. You know, you're leaving points on the field. You have to be able to. You know, points are going to be at a premium in that game. And I think even with Michigan scoring 24, that's evidence that points are at a premium because they're averaging over 40. So. Yeah, you had. I thought that was a big sequence, and I thought not being able to punch it in first and goal from the 3 in the first quarter was huge. I thought at that point that there was going to be some trouble there because, again, points at a premium, but you can't. I mean, that's a big swing there in the second half. Start, you know, with Drew putting the ball, you know, on the ground. The Michigan player made a good play, went after the ball, did what he should have done, but. Yeah. So you look at it, it's probably a 10-point swing at best because, you know, Penn State maybe goes in and scores a touchdown there. You get 7, and you end up giving up 3 off of that. And the way Michigan plays, they play like Illinois did a couple of years ago where they're just going to run it every time. And they're going to wind the clock down. They're going to take, like you said, take forever. They're just the opportunities in that game just weren't going to be there to score very often, to come back and to get into a rhythm. So I thought, It was huge there to fumble when you had a rhythm. That was pretty much, I thought, that was the moment, I think, you know, when I started writing the column because I thought this is probably this is probably going to be hard to come back from.
Right. I agree with that. And again, the ability of McCarthy to be a play-action passer and be so good at it or to tuck it down himself and run, that keeps you a little off balance. Well, why don't you throw 11 in the box? Because with this guy, you can't throw 11 in the box. You don't know what he's going to do with it. Illinois, in the 9 overtime game, did not have a guy that could throw the ball, not even in the same realm as this guy. And I think that played a role. And I think Michigan was smart. Their defense is playing well, so let's chew yards and clock.
Yeah, Michigan did considering they didn't have their head coach, I thought Michigan played a very smart, calm, and collected game. And, you know, and you could do that with McCarthy because, I mean, it's weird because he was 7 for 8 for like 60 yards, and I was actually even a little more convinced that he should be in the Heisman race after that because I thought he kind of controlled the game because you have to honor him. Even if you're running Corum and Donovan Edwards all the time, you have to still honor McCarthy. I thought that was he was a big factor in that game, and you're right. Michigan, I thought, you know, there were some moments. I think Penn State was chasing points, and again, we could debate the 2-point conversions and all that. But I thought that the coaching staff played a little bit differently than they're usually doing as Penn State, and Michigan really, even without Harbaugh, was pretty set in what they were going to do, and they just executed the game plan. And I think that, you know, I don't think that was lost on anybody on Penn State's sideline after the game.
It's interesting. I was talking with Rich Scarsella, and he told me he was going through the parking lot, and people were asking, you know, do you think they can hang with this team? Do you think they can hang with him? Well, now they lose to Ohio State by 8, lost the game on the road, didn't win. They lose this game by 9 at home, didn't win. In reality, as now you've watched this out, how big is the gap between Penn State and those two? Is it large? Is it small? Is it a couple of plays? What is it in your mind?
I don't know. I think it looks bigger than it really is. And you look at it; they're within one possession the entire game of Ohio State. Mm-hmm. And I think there was times my criticism of them was they played like they were maybe two possessions behind at times against Ohio State, and they should have punted at one point and all that. And so I think it is, and I think it was pretty much the same with Michigan. I never thought they were uncompetitive in that game. I thought for most of the day they were pretty even. So. Yeah, I didn't think they even did a bad job stopping the run. I mean, you're going to give up 200 yards when they're running the ball that much. So I didn't think that some of the things that have hurt them in the past against Michigan hurt them in this game. But you know, is there a gap? Yes, and I think the fact that there is a gap is significant, and some of that gap is probably a mental gap too. And it's not just the players; it's the coaches, and it's a lot of things that shouldn't. You know, maybe be there, but they're there but they show up when you lose year after year after year to the same teams. And I think it starts to manifest itself. And look, I think talent wise, Penn State's there. I think they are maybe a cut behind Ohio State on offense. Maybe I think style wise, they're different than Michigan, and what Michigan's doing well right now and what's making them successful is that their style is a little bit different, and they've got the quarterback right now who could run their offense the way Harbaugh wants, and Corum is a good back. But you know, I think any given year, look, I mean, they're winning 10 games a year. They can't be that bad.
Right.
They can't. This can't be a. You know, you hear the questions coming through. Oh, what do you think today? I think it'll be a good game. Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't know. Well. Yeah, it's got to be a good game. It was a good game against Ohio State. They were in it. They didn't play very well, but they were in it. I thought they played a little better this time. And if you take the fumble out of it, who knows? So I think they're close, but they're not there. The question I would what I debate here with myself is: are they closer to being the fifth best team in next year's Big Ten or the sixth best team than they are to being the second best team? And that's, I think, I don't have the answer to that, but I think that's kind of the concern I would have, because once, you know, Washington, USC, UCLA, whoever comes in, little different conference. So this was probably their chance to get to position themselves for next year to be one of the big three. But I think right now they're the third. And that's not good enough. James has said it a million times. Not good enough for them. Certainly not good enough for them. Certainly not good enough for the fans. But it is what it is at this point. And I don't, I think there's a gap, and the size of that gap is hard to define. But I think it's a pretty good one mentally.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting when the four West Coast teams come in, for a couple of reasons. Number one, they're big names, and have had great performances. But they're also coming in, and three of the four are going to have new quarterbacks. Because there will be no Bo Nix, no Michael Penix, and in all likelihood, no Caleb Williams. So I don't really know how good they're going to be next year, because they're going to have new quarterbacks.
Yeah, and that's the big key. It's the great equalizer is the quarterback. And who knows? It could be anybody.
Right.
because there's free agency, basically.
Sure.
But yeah, if you look at – I happen to be looking at Oregon's roster from – a couple of years ago, just to see some offensive stats for them, and obviously the reason why. But you know, I didn't know half of their players, I don't watch Oregon every week, so you're looking at the quarterback was Anthony Brown, I think. He was a good player, but he's certainly not Bo Nix, you know. And Penix is, you know, I thought Penix was a really good player at Indiana, and he's you put him around a better talent at Washington. And you put him on the turf, that's a really good quarterback there. So, but they do lose those guys, and who knows who they get. But you know it's every season's going to look so different now, thanks to the portal and things like that. But one thing that the thing that doesn't look different is Ohio State's at the top, Michigan's there, mm-hmm. and could you get to that level? But you would hope if you're Penn State that you can prove that you're better than the four guys coming in. Because if you're better than those four guys, you still give yourself a chance at that tournament.
And we don't know what Michigan's going to look like next year. With everything that's gone on there, and McCarthy may be an NFL draft guy, he's in his third year now. So we don't know what they're going to look like next year, to be honest.
Yeah, they're not going to have those two guards, the 77, Zinser and Keegan, are really good players. Yep. And I think they're able to get to the second level pretty quick. They'll be gone. Corum's gone. Donovan Edwards, I believe, is gone. Mm-hmm. McCarthy could go. So you don't know what Michigan is going to be. But Harbaugh, I think it's likely Harbaugh won't be there next year. So, yeah, it changes. It changes every year. But when you look at it in the now, I think that's when it seems bleaker. And it seems like Penn State's in this precarious position where the losses mean a little more than the wins right now, and they have to figure out a way to change that going forward. And once you win one of those games against one of those teams, you're good. But the problem next year is they don't play Michigan.
Right.
When it comes to the offensive coordinator hire, whenever it does happen, how interested are you going to be in the style of offense that he has a reputation for running, considering how Drew plays the game and how Bo Perbuehler plays the game?
Yeah, I think that's the entire key. I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, and there's I like to follow a lot of these guys, all these new offenses that you see. The UNLV offense, for instance, is one that I was watching, and I know that's a guy, he's a Pittsburgh guy, the guy running that offense, and it's neat. They do a lot of fun things, and it's interesting. But you start to think, is that going to work in the Big Ten if they do something like that? So I would tend to think that James is going to go with somebody who kind of does what they currently do, only better. And I think that's really the goal, right? I mean, it's always the goal because that fits your personnel. And even in the transfer portal area, most of your personnel is coming back every year. So you want to bring in somebody who could play a style that's going to benefit Drew Aller, who's going to benefit Bo Perbuehler in a year. It's going to work Nick Singleton and Catron Allen in because you're hoping you have all those guys. And someone who could develop receivers, scheme them open, things like that. And most importantly, someone who players are going to want to play for. So I think, I don't think it's going to be someone totally dissimilar from Mike Yurcich. And I don't think it's going to be something totally dissimilar from what Franklin has always said he wants to do. It's not going to be some kind of crazy new scheme coming in. But, that said, there are guys out there who have worked for James and done his system before. So I think, sometimes I think that's overvalued. You see these lists of guys' names. Here's possible candidates, and nobody really knows because James didn't tell them. So nobody really knows who's being looked at. And I'd be very surprised if anybody was being looked at right now, unless James has a candidate that he knows he's bringing in. But I think when this is a year that I might put a little more stock in that, because I think it's got to be a hire that the fans are going to like. I don't know if it has to be, but I think it would help, and I think it would have to be. It would be somebody with some familiarity with what they do who could come in and, I guess, take them to another level, or a level they've been at in the past.
Donnie, great conversation as always. Thanks so much for giving us the time today. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks, Steve.
Donnie Collins, Scranton Times Tribune, does outstanding work. Penn State's so fortunate to have outstanding beat writers that we have on here all the time, do great work.
Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere, wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. Pickle bar led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. Don't forget about Brewers Outlet gift cards. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Brian Tripp, Roger Corey, Jack Ham, join me tonight, 6 o'clock, Nittany Lions at Michigan State from Ford Field in Detroit.